You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, yesterday the Republicans went on record. They don't want anybody to know where the secret cash is coming from so 17 angry billionaires can end up owning America. It's pretty grim. And Bain washing. I'll tell you all about that in just a minute. We get quite a day here. Later on in our second hour, Matthew Vadim is going to be by. We're going to be talking, broadly speaking, about Mitt Romney's Bain departure and why it matters, although I want to get into that in this first hour here, too. And in our third hour, Congressman Dennis Kucinich is coming by. We're going to be talking about a variety of things, from LIBOR to a leak in a nuclear plant that's near the Illinois, Ohio, that whole area, and the Davis-Bessey plant, and a crack in the containment vessel. It's amazing what's going on. So Congressman Kucinich is going to drop by, a great guy. So, but for the first hour here, I wanted to just throw this open to you, because I got a call yesterday. We've got this caller voice line where people can call up and leave their rants. And by the way, it only holds I don't want to get into all the details, but people can call in. And this particular caller called and had this to say about Mitt Romney's returns. It may be the most spot on, but here he is.
Tom, the issue with Mitt Romney, I think, is going to turn out to be that he made contributions to his 401k and to his IRA to the tax year that he supposedly wasn't working there. Okay, that's how he managed to get to the $100 million, and he's not going to want that to come out because he would not have been eligible to have made those contributions if he really wasn't working for the company, A. And B, Bain Financial, as I understand it, is a heavy player in the foreclosure market, and he made a substantial amount of money in the other years based on mortgages going down, okay, and people losing their homes, and he isn't going to want that to come out, okay, for the years, okay, from 2000 to 2010. But just my comments. Thank you. Have a good day.
That was a good call and an excellent point. If Mitt Romney in 99, 2000, 2001, 2002, 2003, the years that he wasn't working at Bain, but by coincidence was the CEO, chairman of the board, and sole owner of all the stock in the company, but he wasn't working there. If during those years he seeded into his 401k tens or hundreds of millions of dollars, or, you know, he's got 100 million in there, so I guess it would be tens or single, whatever. If he put money into his 401k out of Bain, or frankly, if he was drawing a paycheck of any substance. Now, in his filing reports, the federal government requires you to list anything over $100,000, and so he simply said over $100,000. It could have been $50 million. We don't know. But who makes $50 million for a job that they're not doing? For that matter, who makes $100,000 for a job they're not doing? And for that matter, somebody gets paid $100,000 for a job that they don't do, and then they come to us and they say, hey, I got great experience in the business market. Make me president. Really? You know how to get paid for a job you don't do? That's sort of like the Reagan presidency. You know, he slept through most of it. I'm not making that up. If you're old enough to remember, you know, Reagan took naps every day, and he had his lunch. Anyway, particularly toward the end. But I don't know. So my question, why is it that Mitt Romney won't release his tax returns? Do you have a theory? My personal theory is that he's in cahoots with the pigeons, the robotic pigeons on the planet Xenu. Xenu, the planet where the Scientologists say, you know, 10,000 years ago they seeded the Earth, and when we're all clear, they're going to come back and get us. And these, you never see a dead pigeon, you never see a baby pigeon. They must be robots, right? And what do you see when you have, you know, powerful people gathering around anywhere around the world? Pigeons! They're spies. Mitt Romney's somehow hooked up with the pigeons, and it's in his tax returns. Okay, that's one end of the spectrum of theories. The other end of the spectrum of theories, I like that one. The other end of the spectrum of theories is you know, what our caller just said, that he had actual Bain income during that time, or that his tax returns would reveal that he was making money from Bain subsidiaries, like this what's it called, Keister or something like that. There's this funky name for this one that he created in the Cayman Islands, There's like three or four versions of it, and one he moved into his wife's name the day before he was sworn in as governor of Massachusetts. And that apparently this thing was like what it was all about. In fact, in its incorporation papers, it said it was created to deal in credit default swaps and collateralized debt obligations. In other words, he was making a pile of money off the mortgage market and the mortgage market going south. Or maybe he had a big loss in the mortgage market going south, and therefore he paid no income taxes for a couple of years. I mean, who knows? But whatever it is, he doesn't want to let it out. So if you have a theory, 866-987-THOM, I would be very curious to hear your theory. There's a lot, you know, there's a lot to this. And in 1968, George Romney's dad released 12 years of tax returns. Why? Well, as George Romney, the former governor of the state of Michigan, when I was a little kid growing up there, he said, 1 year could be a fluke, perhaps done for show. So his son has released 1 year. And then he's in the process of massaging 2011 now, so he's going to release that soon. In 1994, Mitt Romney demanded that Ted Kennedy release his tax returns. That's interesting. Of course, that was before the big money years at Bain. In 2002, Mitt Romney demanded that his opponent in the Massachusetts gubernatorial race, which he won, by the way, release her husband's tax returns. And the Romney campaign's demand in the 2002 election was, what is she hiding? Very interesting. And then, you know, as I pointed out yesterday, day before yesterday, one of Romney's spokespeople said, well, you know, John Kerry only released 2 years of tax returns. Well, that's because 18 years of his tax returns were already in the public domain when he ran for president, so the other 2 years made it a total of 20. Mitt Romney hasn't quite done that. John McCain was given 23 years worth of tax returns from Romney. And then, you know, apparently decided Sarah Palin was better. And John McCain, this falls into the category of with friends like these who needs enemies. John McCain today came out and said, oh, we didn't not pick Mitt Romney because of his tax returns. We picked him because Sarah Palin was a better candidate. Oh, John, do not open that mouth. Open mouth, insert foot. I mean, incredible. By the way, that would have, if, you know, his 2010 tax return was 500 pages long. So if he gave 23 years of tax returns to John McCain's campaign, that's like 10,000 pages. No wonder they picked Sarah Palin. They didn't have the time to read Mitt Romney's tax return. Remember, they were in kind of a rush there? I mean, basically, ever since Watergate, it's just been normal for presidents to release years and years and years of tax returns. So the question, in fact, Barack Obama has, you know, released tax returns all the way back to 2000. And, you know, prior to that, I'm not sure he was making all that money. Joe Biden back to 98, that's what, 12, 14 years worth. Obama's got 12 years worth. It's just, it's, you know, you can go through the list here. John McCain, George W. Bush, Richard Cheney. It's Dick. Bill Clinton, George Bush, Ronald Reagan, Jimmy Carter. They all, hey, here's a couple of years of tax returns. Here's a bunch of years of tax returns. What do you think that Mitt Romney's hiding? Do you think it, maybe he got in with the Chinese mafia with Shelley Adelson? You know, the billionaire who runs the casino in Macau? Who's funding the Republicans? I mean, what do you think? Give me a call.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
What is Mitt Romney hiding in his tax returns? We're going to explore that over the course of the next hour, and I'm guessing there's going to be a lot of fantastic possibilities. I think increasingly this is the feeling that Mitt Romney has. It's like, whoa, I'm trapped. What do I do? Where do I go? Oh, my. Okay, Tom, in Olympia, Washington, listening to KTPK and Talk 1090. By the way, I will be there on Saturday. In fact, let me get the sheet here. I've got papers all over the place. This is it right here, am1090seattle.com for tickets and for information. So, Tom, what's up?
Well, good morning. In regards to the issue of when Mitt Romney left Bain, I find it very interesting because when you purchase a business, you're purchasing the business operations and the modus operandi. So just because Mitt Romney was no longer at the head of the helm from 1999 to 2002, the process in which the investors were purchasing was what Mitt Romney did prior to 1999. So from 1999 forward, the business practices of Bain never were changed because that was what the investors were purchasing. Irrespective if Romney was there making these choices, it was his philosophy in business that they were purchasing. Does
right.
that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
And so these ideas that was he there when GTS Steel was taken down or not, that was the business practice that the investors were purchasing, that type of cutthroat business practice.
Yeah, excellent point. Thank you very much for that call, Tom. Let's see here. Laura in Llano, Texas. Laura, you have a theory?
My theory is that he won't release his taxes because he doesn't want the LDS in Salt Lake City to know that he hasn't paid his 10%.
Ooh.
The Mormon cult requires that you pay 10%, and you have to show your 401, you have to show your income.
Your tax returns?
Before you give the taxes, and you have to pay 10% before taxes
uh-huh.
to the national organization, the cult in Salt Lake City. And I just don't think that he wants the Mormons to know he hasn't paid his tax.
Oh, that's interesting. That's another interesting possibility. Thank you, Laura, for that. Brian in Detroit. Brian, you have a theory about what Mitt Romney's hiding.
There's actually a legal way to get his IRA account to $102 million.
Okay.
You have to go through a little bit of the math. But Bain Capital LLC was incorporated at a par value share price of 1 cent.
Right.
Over just over 3 million shares.
Okay,
now, his IRA account allows a $5,000 investment, which is 500,000 shares at 1 penny each every year. Over 6 years, that's 3 million shares valued at $30,000 total in his IRA account. And in 2002, right. when he sold the company because he became governor,
mm-hmm.
if he sold it for $34 a share, given its earning potential, that's relatively reasonable, I think, that would equate to exactly $102 million in an IRA account with no immediate tax liability.
Amazing. And so you think that he doesn't want to release his tax records because people will realize that not only did he make $100 million, but he didn't pay a single penny in tax on it.
That is correct.
Because he dumped it all, he laundered it basically all through his 401k. Fascinating, Brian. Interesting theories here. Rich in Cedro, nothing as good as the pigeons, but Rich in Cedro Woolley, Washington. Hey, Rich, what do you think?
Hey, it's Cedro Woolley.
Cedro, my apologies.
Right now, we're focused on Mitt Romney's taxes. If he puts out his returns, not only exposes him, but the entire tax system, that becomes the topic of discussion. And now he's got to explain which loopholes he's going to close on his rich supporters.
Right, because he said he's going to cut taxes on billionaires, raise taxes on working people. But the tax cut on the billionaires is going to be so much bigger than the tax raising on the working people that he's actually going to add to the deficit hundreds of billions of dollars. And he said he's going to make that up by closing loopholes, but he hasn't said what those loopholes are. There's a lot of speculation. The loopholes are going to be things like the child deduction, the home mortgage interest deduction, you know, things that middle-class people use. Those are tax loopholes, too. But your point is that if he releases his tax returns, I mean, just 1 year was 500 pages. What we would see is that, you know, here's 173 different kinds of loopholes that he used. And now the conversation becomes about his loopholes. That's a very interesting one. Thank you, Rich, for that. Mike in Muncie, Indiana. Hey, Mike, thanks for listening to Sirius Satellite Radio. What's your theory?
Thank you very much. Well, I just find it interesting that Governor Romney, he's going to have to make up his mind. Either he's a felon because he's lied to the SEC, or he's lied to the public.
Or, you know, now,
reactive.
But, you know, what he said to the SEC was different than what he said No, wait a minute. When he was running for governor of Massachusetts, he was also, he said to the in order to get residency in Massachusetts, because they have a residency requirement. If you don't live in Massachusetts, you can't run for governor. He claimed that he was also working for Bain, you know, on and off, periodically, sporadically during those years to have that residency. So both of those are the two things that he could probably be prosecuted for. So, yeah, I guess the third one is lying to the public. Excellent point. Thank you very much. Frank in Hartford, Kansas. You have a theory, Frank?
First, this real quick. You mentioned Watergate earlier.
Hmm?
You would think because Nixon had Mitt's daddy, George, swift-boated by his axemen, that he didn't like Mormons. He loved Mormons. Haldeman and Ehrlichman were Mormons.
Oh, really?
Someday we should discuss what kind of political animals Mormons were back then.
Well, I could give you a riff. I mean, you know, I've heard them on, you know, hey, the five conservatives on the Supreme Court are Catholic. I don't think that you can pick on any religion because there's a couple of people who are members of that religion who are behaving badly.
No, you can't. And I don't know Mormons personally, but I've heard them talk on other shows, and some of them are the most lovely people you would ever meet.
Absolutely.
But Haldeman and Ehrlichman, you know, well, Nixon threw them overboard and they went off to jail.
Right.
But
right.
They had no personal principles.
I didn't realize it was Nixon who went after Romney's dad when he came back and said he was brainwashed.
Yeah. Do you know if Romney surrounds himself with Mormons?
I don't know. I mean, I know that several of the members of Bain Capital are Mormons, but I don't know to what extent this is just all about that. Frank, thanks a lot for the call. We'll be back 27 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
So what do you think Mitt Romney is hiding? Or is it just that he's a stubborn rich kid who figures I don't have to tell anybody anything. I can do whatever I want. What is it?
You can't hide your lying eyes and your smile.
Okay, Mitt, you can't hide your lying eyes. What is going on with Mitt Romney? What's your theory? My theory is it's got to do with the pigeons and the planet Xenu. He's hiding something. He's in collusion with them. They've not just been spying for the Xenunians. They've been spying for Romney. Could be. I don't know. Now, we started this thing off with a caller who was suggesting. In fact, let's play this one more time, Shane, just because this really set the whole thing off going. This was a caller into our rant line who had this to say as a theory about why Mitt Romney is not releasing his tax returns.
Oh, Tom, the issue with Mitt Romney, I think, is going to turn out to be that he made contributions to his 401k and to his IRA to the tax years that he supposedly wasn't working there. Okay, that's how he managed to get to the $100 million, and he's not going to want that to come out because he would not have been eligible to have made those contributions if he really wasn't working for the company.
Okay, so that's one theory.
The main financial, as I understand it, is a heavy player in the foreclosure market, and he made a substantial amount of
money
in the other years.
So basically, he made his money. You can wrap that. He made his money basically, throwing people out of their houses. Could it be? Anyhow, Jan in Seattle. Hey, Jan, thanks for listening to Talk 1090, where I will be this weekend. What's up?
Yes. Well, in the mid-90s, I was programming state tax returns, and I was thinking in terms of what we've heard from the other people and also the Indiana Secretary of State,
right,
who was voting one place and living someplace else.
Right.
And I'm wondering if in some of those years he doesn't want to release, or one of those years, if he was voting for political purpose, registered to vote in Massachusetts, but maybe for state tax purposes.
Was filing in
Utah. A
resident
of another state, such as New Hampshire, which, if I remember correctly, had an interest in dividends tax, but not an income tax.
You're correct.
Putting his interest in dividends into tax offshore tax accounts. I'm wondering if he could evade the state taxes that way.
Yeah, they've got a mansion up on Lake Winnipesaukee in New Hampshire. Or it could have been that he was claiming Utah as his state of residence.
Well, Utah, I think, had a state income tax, but I don't think it was one of the large ones.
Right, but I mean,
California was one of the high ones.
It could be, though, that his CPA said, you're living full-time in Utah. And
yeah.
So you've got to file your tax returns in Utah, you know, for at least a couple of years here.
Definitely.
And if he did that and he was continuing to vote in Massachusetts, then, you know, he's committed voter fraud.
There's a discrepancy that would... Yeah, that would be very obvious, and it would be a very ironic one given how much Republicans are currently running on voter fraud, even though it's almost non-existent.
Yeah, fascinating. Thank you very much for that, Jan. Joy in Santa Cruz, California, listening on iHeartRadio. Hey, Joy, you have a theory.
Yes, I do. I'm thinking that possibly it's also a matter of a conflict of interest with his contract with the Olympics.
Mm-hmm.
That he, because he was working at that time period for the Olympics, and if he had a conflict of interest, then he could be in big trouble with their contract law.
Oh, that's interesting. So what do you think that conflict of interest would have been?
I'm not exactly sure, but your colleague Randy Rhodes brought that up a few days ago.
Interesting. That's as good a theory as any I've heard. Although I think running the Olympics it's not like, you know, taking a job with General Electric where there's, you know, you get fired if you don't, you know, quack, quack, quack. This was more of a like, you know, they couldn't find anybody else to do it. Or at least that's how he portrays it. He came riding in on the, you know, on the white horse with the white hat saying, I'll fix everything. But, it's possible. It's totally possible. Thank you, Joy. Gino in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, your theory.
Hey, Tom, my theory is that he is going to release his records, his income tax records, but he's going to release them so late into the campaign that they won't be able to be thoroughly scrubbed. If 1 year is 500 pages worth, we have no idea how detailed other years are, and if he releases them late enough in, the material just won't be able to be digested, and it won't be as newsworthy as if he does it now.
Could be. I would... it's a good theory. It's a good theory. And a decade ago, it would have been a great theory. But now you've got crowdsourcing. I mean, you've got TPM did this recently. I mean, this has been, in fact, when the Supreme Court, the whole Obamacare Supreme Court decision came out, people were slicing up. You take 5 pages, I'll take 5 pages. You know, with a 10,000 page tax return document or a series of years of tax returns, it could be crowdsourced and massaged in a day. So I'm a little less confident that that's his plan. But, on the other hand, maybe Mitt Romney doesn't realize that there's crowdsourcing and there's those Internet tubes that are not trucks.
Then my second theory is I heard it on your show. I believe it was yesterday. My guess is he was involved in credit default swaps. And it'll come out that he put so many of us out of our homes.
I would lay money on that. That's right up there with the pigeons from Xenu, only that's a serious one. Thank you very much, Gino. Tom in San Diego, California, listening on the AM 950 stream. Hey, Tom, what's up?
Oh, hi, Tom. Love your show.
Thanks.
Well, boils down to one word, but I want to elaborate how bad it is. Sweatshops.
Okay.
Think Tom Delay, think Marianas Islands, and think about the slavery dormitories, the company store, the forced abortions. This is his vision for America.
Right. And so you think that Mitt Romney was a stockholder in or was profiting in some way off of the offshore sweatshops? I mean, we know that Bain Capital offshored a lot of jobs. Is this kind of part of the same fabric? Is that what you're talking about?
That's what I'm saying. And what was revealed last week on Mother Jones was the electronics outsourcing down in Southeast Asia.
Right.
So I'm thinking... all of that slave labor is, getting the lowest cost of labor in the world, and no matter what, including sweatshops.
Amazing. It could be anything. Thank you very much for that call. Malcolm in Boise, Idaho, watching us on Roku. Hey, Malcolm, what's up?
Oh, I just have an idea about how Mitt doesn't want to release his tax return.
Your theory?
I think, I've got all of the people that have come out today talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
Every one of those could be the reason, if not one or more of them. Include the LDS Church, and he doesn't want people to know that he didn't pay taxes for many years.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't want that out, and he's not going to release his tax returns.
Yeah, I think you're right that he's not going to do it, although he's saying today that he's not going to do it because he's just not enthusiastic about it. And
I wouldn't be enthusiastic either.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to fly. I just don't think it's going to fly. Thanks a lot for the call. Ed, watching Free Speech TV in Klamath, Oregon. Hey, Ed, what's your theory?
Tom, I think if the IRS ever got a hold of all his tax returns and with the scrutiny that the Democrats are putting on it, they would be able to track the money that he's offshored, and he might go to jail.
Yeah, okay. That's a possibility. That falls into the tax fraud theory. Thank you. Gary in Columbus, Ohio. Hey, Gary, thanks for listening to Sirius. What's your theory?
Hey, Tom. Yeah, I kind of agree with a few callers ago about his church, as far as the Mormon church. You're supposed to give so much to your church.
Right.
And I think that a whole can of worms would be opened up if he released his tax returns back to 99.
Yeah, there's a real interesting piece in today's New York Times about the small group of what they call first families, the original Mormon settlers in, you know, who followed Brigham Young after Joseph Smith was killed in Illinois, followed Brigham Young out to Utah. And that set of first families includes the Romney family, includes the Marriott family and several other families of prominence who have all ponied up large, you know, it's like 6- and 7-figure contributions and other things to his campaign. So if his releasing his tax returns would put him in bad favor with the Mormon Church, that, you know, Gary, that makes a lot of sense. That makes a lot of sense. Bryant, watches on Free Speech TV in South Haven, Mississippi. Hey, Bryant, what's your theory?
Yes, Tom, you look at the MSNBC special that they've had on TV, it's about 30 minutes long, on cyber espionage, that businesses here in America are leaving and going to China. Well, I think Mitt's not only protecting himself, but he's protecting a lot of investors. If these investors are investing in companies and building them up here in America, making them big, and then outsourcing, then shutting them down, outsourcing all their jobs to China, and then reinvesting in the same company they just went over there to do, then you know, we've got a huge problem.
Yeah,
this right here is.
So you think he's trying to hide his or protect his cronies, basically his buddies.
Well, he's protecting his buddies, and not only that, but if the American people and the people that would vote naturally Republican, especially around here in my area, seen this, they would be appalled.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. Thanks for that. Mark in Portland, Oregon, listening on KPOJ. Hey, Mark, what's up?
Yeah, a couple. There was a gentleman by the name of Bradley Birkenfeld, and he worked for UBS, and he was actually the whistleblower that had all these documents that he brought from Switzerland to the United States.
Uh-huh.
Was going to present it to the Justice Department and the IRS, and under continuing interrogation of Bradley Birkenfeld, they found that he was complicit in this. And they gave him jail term, and but the U.S. was able to recover about $20 billion in U.S. tax dollars from all these people that were hiding their accounts offshore. So my thought is possibly there's even a UBS connection with Mitt Romney. We just don't know.
Right. So he could be involved in that shady thing. Oh, that's an interesting one. Thank you. Don, listening on WCPT in Rockford, Illinois. Don, your theory.
Well, my theory is this. Not only is Mitt Romney a Mormon, he is a high priest in the Mormon Church. You never hear that.
Bishop, why didn't you hear that?
And now I think maybe the high priest is held to a higher standard than 10%. Maybe they're held to 15%. We don't know because the entire Mormon Church is all secretive.
Well,
you can't find out anything about.
To some extent, I mean, he according to his 2010 tax return, he gave 16% of his income to the Mormon Church. I'm assuming that's pre-tax income. That's pretty stiff. But on the other hand, like others have pointed out, and thank you, Don, for the call. It may be in those years where he had no income and paid no taxes that he was able to carry those into other years. I mean, who knows?
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
So to paraphrase, what is Mitt Romney hiding and when did he start hiding it? Why won't he release his tax returns? The tax man knows, but one of the kind of cool things, I guess, about the IRS, and, you know, you hear these conservatives, oh, government can't do anything right, government doesn't know. The IRS does a pretty good job of keeping things confidential and tracking down people who do bad things and whatnot. I mean, you know, there's actually some very efficient government agencies. Sometimes, maybe, no, I'm not going to say too efficient. I think the IRS does a good job. Marvel in Sacramento, watching on Free Speech TV on Dish Network. Hey, Marvel, what's your theory of what Mitt Romney's hiding?
Well, my theory is that, like our curiosity and maybe sometimes disdain about the hoarders, because it is clearly unfounded why someone will have so much of something that they'll never use, and you know, it's a curious behavior.
Yeah.
Now, with Romney being a hoarder, clearly a hoarder of money, and doing everything he can to protect it. The question to us is, are we going to attempt to put someone in the utmost of power who clearly has this untreated mental illness?
Well, that's an interesting question. Is he a hoarder? And that's, you know, that's a question that I think that you can ask of a lot of people who will do just about anything to get and maintain massive and increase massive amounts of wealth. Excellent question, Marvel. Thank you very much for that. Frank in Cambridge, Mass. Hey, Frank, your theory.
I have a theory that Mitt Romney is really the Charlie Baker offense. Charlie Baker ran for governor last term against Deval Patrick.
In Massachusetts. Okay.
Yeah, in Massachusetts, yes. I'm sorry. And he was saying that he was a family man. He did not, he was a president of CEO, Blue Cross Blue Shield CEO.
Mm-hmm.
What they made their money is by closing down offices in Rhode Island. And that made him sort of a successful businessman.
Yeah.
But what he came out saying was he was always attentive to his children. He was away at their softball games. He'd take time off from work. So what he was saying was he was unnecessary in the job, in the functioning of the job,
right.
Regular. So what Mitt Romney is saying is, where he was not there from 1999 to 2002, when Bain made all this money from outsourcing and offshoring jobs,
right.
He wasn't there. But he's saying that he collected money, so he was unnecessary.
Yeah.
In fact, what the Republicans and the conservatives are saying is that the president is unnecessary.
Right. Okay. That's a possibility. Thank you for that, Frank. Mac, whenever anybody mentions Mormons on this show, we get a lot of Mormons calling in saying, I want to correct the record. Are you one? Listening on AM 760 in Castle Rock, Colorado?
That's correct.
Okay. Correct the record, please.
Tithe means one-tenth. I mean, and you can give more if you want, but all they ask is one-tenth of your gross income.
Of your gross income.
There's
There's
no requirement for showing your tax returns.
Okay. Makes sense. I mean, it just makes sense. And thank you for that, Mac. David in Advance, Missouri, listening to iHeartRadio. Hey, David, what's your theory?
Hey, how's it going? Well, first off, I believe that it's all of the above. I think that if he reveals his taxes, we'll find out that it's the worst that everybody's been thinking, everything that everybody said today. But also, what if he's receiving money from other countries' governments to do this to us?
Well, you know, Paul Ryan, if you look at his top 20 campaign donors, two of them are Swiss banks, UBS and Credit Suisse. So, you know,
exactly.
Here you've got one of the most the guy who writes the budget for the United States, who's one of his top, two of his top 20 donors are foreign corporations. And yeah, you're absolutely right. Mitt Romney may well have the same problem. Thank you, David. Paul in Denver, Colorado. Hey, Paul, what's your theory?
Tom, I just want to, you made a comment about Romney, about him, just being the last person to pick to run the Olympics. Utah is a Mormon state, and he's a Mormon, so he was a logical pick for those people.
Oh, to go to Salt Lake, yeah.
I wonder if there was corruption there in Salt Lake City during the Olympics. I wonder if he made any money there off of that.
Well, I did see a news story earlier today that said that when Mitt Romney ran the Olympics in 2000, whatever it was, the Olympics in Salt Lake City, that he outsourced and offshored the manufacture of the American Olympians uniforms also. And just as whoever's running the Olympics now, I forget which country. It wasn't China, but it was some other country that he sent those to. So that would be, I mean, that's a possibility. Maybe there was something corrupt there. David in Cape Canaveral, Florida, your theory.
Yeah, I think it's a different take on it, Tom. I think that if he shows all his records, he'd show how much he tied to the church, and then everyone would know how much he's actually worth.
Mm. So in other words, the fact that he tied 16%, for example, in the 1 year that he's released means that he actually made more than he told the IRS he made because he was being honest with his church and not with the IRS and the American people. Is that what you mean?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. That makes a certain amount of sense for, you know, a guy who's super religious. Al in Tucson, Arizona, your theory.
My theory is that he's hiding something that could either get him in trouble with the law, or he's hiding something that can get him in trouble with the voters.
What do you think that something is?
Well, it's obvious to normal people on the street. a lot of people are turned off by politics right now, and a lot of them aren't paying attention. But the ones that are, they want real answers. They want real change. And the point to me calling the radio show was to really to point out the intolerance that Mormons have towards other people.
Well, okay, I'm not going to go any farther down that road because you can say that of any religion. Jason in Salt Lake City, you have a theory. We just have a half a minute here. It's all yours.
Sure. My theory is that Mitt Romney would rather be criticized for not being transparent than being criticized for what's in his taxes. I don't think this is a real complicated issue.
Yeah.
I don't really understand what's...
But the question is, what would he be criticized for if we knew?
If we knew, yeah,
right.
You know, that's a good thing. It brought the Mormon church, and I mean, the 10% is what's asked for by the church. It's not really a requirement.
Is it, you know, thank you, Jason. Is it that he's getting money from the planet Xenu? Or from Mahmoud Ahmadinejad? It's possible. I mean, you got two Swiss banks funding Paul Ryan. Why isn't Iran funding Romney? Maybe. We'll be back with a debate on this very topic with Matthew Vadim. Stick around.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And what is Mitt Romney hiding and when did he decide to hide it? Matthew Vadim is online. He's a senior editor with the Organization Trends and Foundation Watch Capital Research. Matthew Vadim, VADUM.com is his website. Twitter at Vadim or at Capital Research. Hey, Matthew. Welcome back.
Hey, how are you? You forgot. Also author of Subversion, Inc.
You're right, author of Subversion, Inc.
Books last year.
You're absolutely right. Us authors have to help each other out here. My apologies.
Well, and I bow to you because what do you have, 20 books or so?
23, yeah, in print. I'm the hyperactive one.
I don't know where you find the time.
Yeah, I don't either. Matthew, I am baffled. We just did the last hour where I just threw the lines open to all our callers and said, what do you think Mitt Romney's hiding? Why won't he release his tax returns? I'm curious your thoughts on this.
Well, I don't know if he's hiding anything. I don't particularly care about the details of what he did or didn't do at Bain Capital as of a certain date, whether he was still employed there or whether he still had signing authority or whether he didn't. Basically, this is just a naked attack on capitalism.
Wait a minute. Asking to see a candidate for president of the United States income tax returns is an attack on capitalism?
Well, the attack on Bain Capital is an attack on capitalism.
Nobody's asking to see Bain Capital's tax returns.
No, but it's all tied in. It's all basically, it's all the same subject.
Bain Capital's not a sub-S corporation.
Romney is being accused of being a capitalist. David Axelrod and Patrick Gaspard of the DNC, formerly with Acorn and the Working Families Party of New York, are saying that Mitt Romney is guilty of doing what capitalists do, that he has put money offshore, that he has done things like outsource jobs, and they're going on a fishing expedition hoping that some ancient tax returns of his will give them fodder.
You know, Matthew, I think you're probably right. And here's the question that I would have to ask you in that context then. Is it possible that there are good ways to be a capitalist and bad ways to be a capitalist?
Well, being a welfare capitalist is not good. In other words, lobbying Congress and lobbying state legislatures in order to get special deals, sweetheart deals.
Right. So Romney got one of those. I mean, you know, he paid a maximum 15% income tax on his income because it was called carried interest. Carried interest was a giant tax loophole that was lobbied for by Wall Street banksters, and Bain Capital was one of the people lobbying for it.
I'm talking about unleashing lobbyists and getting lawmakers to approve special provisions and
but the,
laws.
But the larger question of good capitalism versus bad capitalism.
Mitt Romney, I think you're getting a little in the weeds there. I don't
no, yeah, well, let's step out of the weeds. Let's
need to look for that tax loophole. He simply followed the law and took advantage.
Okay, that's fine. Let's go back. Let's go back to 1881. Right.
Was that Grover Cleveland?
That would have been the first year of Grover Cleveland's administration. That's
he
correct.
Was a fine president.
He was actually. He was the only Democrat who was elected during the entire Gilded Age, and he was elected twice, and they weren't consecutive, interestingly enough.
And
but in any case, Grover Cleveland. I'm not sure that Grover. Yeah, I know Grover Cleveland was president in 87, 88. But here's what happened. 1881 was when the Sherman Antitrust Act was put into law. And Senator Sherman from Ohio put that thing forward. And the reason why was because of the business practices of John Rockefeller. John Rockefeller was literally going into collusion with railroads and with trucking companies who were necessary to transport oil to market, and was buying trucking companies so that his smaller competitors would not have access to transportation of their oil. He was locking out the marketplace. That was viewed at the time as bad capitalism. And then Teddy Roosevelt in the 1900s, I think it was 1906, Teddy Roosevelt set it up. It was William Howard Taft who actually executed it it must have been 1910, 1911, something like that. Broke Standard Oil into 28 separate companies because, again, they were practicing bad capitalism. It wasn't capitalism in the public interest. Is it conceivable that Mitt Romney has been practicing bad capitalism? He's been practicing capitalism in a way that hurts American workers, hurts the American economy, is fundamentally anti-American. And if so, shouldn't you and I both condemn that?
What Mitt Romney did, from what I understand, when he was at Bain Capital, is he was involved in deals that restructured debt and that helped to rescue failing businesses. Some shut down, some were saved. That's the nature of markets. That's how these things work.
But that's not exclusively what he did, Matthew. There were companies that Bain bought that were functional and profitable.
Some snidely whiplash figure sitting there rubbing his palms together.
Yeah, I think so. I think so, yeah.
Okay, well, what evidence do you have? You're just hoping that turns up in his tax returns from 1990 or something like that.
No, you look at the people. There was that paper plant that was actually a profitable ongoing venture, and it was quite profitable. And Bain Capital looked at it and said, we could cut a bunch of this workforce, we could ship this stuff overseas. They brought it. They had the employees build a 30-foot stage. And then the guys from Bain came in, stood on the stage 3 weeks later and said, you're all fired. They shut down the plant. They moved their operations overseas, and 300 and some odd middle class, good working middle class jobs vanished. That was done by Bain Capital. That's the kind of thing that Mitt Romney says, I wasn't involved in. Bain Capital did that in 2001. But that's the kind of stuff that Bain Capital was doing. And I'm asking the question, is that bad capitalism? Could it be that bad capitalism is the kind of thing that Mitt Romney's tried to hide?
Shutting down a business and causes people to lose their jobs is not necessarily an example of what you might call bad capitalism.
Why not?
Bad capitalism is, in my view, working in collusion with other businesses to fix prices or to lobby Congress or a state legislature to get special favors.
Okay, so you're opposed to the U.S. Chamber of Commerce.
I'm actually not. I have to admit, I'm not a big fan of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce.
Okay, so we agree on that point. But here's the larger question, Matthew. When we incorporate, and this is a corporation. I have a corporation. This little business, this radio show. When you incorporate, you get special privileges from the government. I can take my employees here out to lunch, and we can deduct it from our taxes. If you and I went to lunch. Well, actually, if we went to lunch and we talked business, we could deduct it from our taxes because I have a corporation. But if we didn't have a corporation, we couldn't do that, right? So, and that's just the smallest, most obvious thing. There's a thousand benefits to corporation to incorporation. The reason, well, let me just finish this thought, and then I'll throw it to you, and you can riff on it extensively, okay? Matthew, just let me finish this thought, because I genuinely want to hear your thoughts on this. When we give somebody all these benefits of corporation, we expect them to behave in a way that benefits society. That's the only reason that we allow corporations to exist. At what point do you say this corporation isn't benefiting American society?
Well, that's not for people who believe in free markets to say. I most of the time, I would think. You see,
what?
you've got me arguing here on alien terrain, okay? Because you don't believe in capitalism. You think that
I am I'm not a capitalist. I'm a free enterprisist, but I don't disbelieve in capitalism.
Well,
I believe in regulated capitalism.
The Democratic Socialists of America, so I don't think you're much of a capitalist. But
most Democratic Socialists are also in favor of a capitalist system. They're not mutually exclusive.
Well, we'll save that for
I'm not a Stalinist.
Nobody ever accused you of that. But the point is, businesses are created to make money. The whole idea, as Adam Smith explained,
to make money in a way that benefits society. Adam Smith wrote a whole book about this called Theory of Moral Sentiments.
The baker doesn't bake bread in order to help the people in his community.
No, but we give that baker tax breaks because we want him to feed people.
But because he does bake that bread, people benefit. So his enlightened self-interest benefits the community.
Okay.
And that's what capitalism is supposed to be about. And that's what a lot of people, including a lot of people in the Republican Party, have forgotten. They don't believe in a level playing field.
I got it. Matthew, we're out of town. Last word to you. Matthew Vadim, MatthewVadim.com, author of Subversion, Inc. Thank you, Matthew.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
That's an interesting conversation. So could it be, this is actually one of the possibilities, wasn't even raised in our last hour. Could it be what Mitt Romney's hiding is that he's been acting against the interests of America? Well, and here's another possibility is Mitt Romney. We just had a call from Thomas, who was the guy who broke the story, or says he was. I take him at his word, over at the Daily Kos back earlier in the week or last week, that when Mitt Romney ran the U.S. Olympic Committee, the Salt Lake City Olympic Committee, excuse me, the U.S. Olympic Committee bought the uniforms for the U.S. Olympians from a company called Roots that manufactured them in Canada. So those were outsourced. But Romney's Salt Lake City committee, which bought the uniforms, 12,000 uniforms for the runners who ran across the country or around the world, those were made in Burma, outsourced through a company named Marker. And Burma, now known as Myanmar, not exactly the nicest place in the world. I mean, you know, Burma kind of makes Kim Jong-un look like a liberal, right? They have changed somewhat in the last few months now that Aung San Suu Kyi has been, you know, liberated politically and actually won an election. But it's, well, anyhow, Burma's a whole other topic. Susan in Wana, Washington. Hey, Susan, what's on your mind?
Just wondering if you've made the connection. The last election, despite Ofrication, got Obama elected, but Romney was throwing tons of money in. But better yet, being the OCCD, the obsessive compulsive Christian disorder that Romney is, where the money is coming from is not just strictly casinos. Casino is the front business that makes it look legit.
You're talking about Shelley Adelson?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Who's by the way, not Christian, but in any case.
Selective kind of prostitution, not adult, but child.
Yeah, I don't have any knowledge that would back that up, so I'm not going to go there. What people are starting to look into is that Shelley Adelson was somehow in it with the triads, which in China, a triad is like here, the mafia, and that he... In fact, there's an email that was part of a WikiLeaks dump in which he said to the mayor of Beijing, don't worry, I'll get you the Olympics, because the Republicans were opposed to this. After all, it was communist China. And Shelley Adelson got the Republicans to say, okay, cool, Olympics, China, no problem. And in exchange for that, China gave Shelley Adelson the concession to build the only casino that you can gamble in, the Chinese can gamble in, just off the coast of China in the island of Macau. And then that money coming out of communist China is what has been funding the Republican Party for all these years, in large part. So, but we'll see how that plays out. That story is still only half told. Michael, listening to Talk 1090, where I will be on Saturday in Camano Island, Washington. Hey, Michael, what's up?
Are you still there?
Yeah.
Oh, great. I just had to turn off my speakerphone.
Okay.
Well, I'll save my accolades for you. Aside from, you're the only commentator on left-wing radio that I refer my fascist right-wing relatives to.
Oh, well, that's a high praise. Thank you.
Well, you're so sensible. But I had a theory on the whole Romney thing and what he's hiding.
Uh-huh.
It has to do with HSBC sucking up to Congress today and apologizing. Can you imagine apologizing for a decade or more of laundering drug and terrorist money? And, of course, Congress is probably going to fawn all over them for their apology. But I'm just finding – I have this hunch since the money was laundered through a bunch of subsidiaries in places like the Cayman Islands, Virgin Islands, Swiss Bank, mm-hmm. stuff like that. Maybe he's a little worried that he put some of his money with the wrong people.
Or if Bain owned a company that was laundering drug money, too.
That's very possible, but it seems to me from the story I read, and it doesn't seem like our media is covering, I had to read this on the BBC the first thing this morning, if corporations are people, then I guess I'm in favor of capital punishment.
Yeah, well, I've been saying that for a long time. Corporations, up until the 1890s, corporations in the United States could not, depending on the state you were in, because all corporate charters are state-based, corporations could not last more than 20, 30, or 40 years. And then during the charter mongering era of the late 1890s, John Rockefeller kicked off this competition when Ohio kicked him out because he was violating the antitrust laws. And he said, which state will change their laws to accept me? And there was this big competition between Connecticut and Rhode Island and New Jersey and New York State and principally those four, but everybody else kind of got in on the act. Ultimately, Delaware won that competition, having the lowest standards for a corporation, which is why half of all the companies in the New York Stock Exchange are incorporated in Delaware. You can incorporate in Delaware with one single incorporator and one single sentence of purpose of corporation, and that is this corporation is incorporated to do whatever is legal in the state of Delaware. But, New Jersey is who got Mr. Rockefeller's business because they got there a little earlier than Delaware. But anyhow, the point is that up until that time, corporations automatically had to go through the equivalent of probate. And routinely, 2,000 a year more or less, various state secretaries of state would give the death penalty to corporations for not practicing, for not behaving in the public good. So excellent point. Thank you very much for that. Hale in Naperville, Illinois. Listen to WCPT. A minute to the break. Hale, your thoughts?
Yeah, everybody's missing the point on Bain Capital. Like your last guest was talking about, it's anti-capitalism.
Mm-hmm.
Mitt Romney's selling himself as a job creator, and Bain Capital has continually outsourced jobs, shipped jobs overseas to China. They're doing it to this day in Freeport, Illinois. They're shutting down the Sensata factory, which they own. They're forcing the employees of Sensata to train their Chinese replacements, whom they've flown in to Freeport, so they can learn these jobs and take them back to China.
Bain is doing that right now as we speak?
They're doing that right now. The employees of the company, I was at a rally 2 weeks ago. They're trying to save their jobs.
How do you spell the name of that company?
Sensata, Sensata.
Okay.
Northern Illinois Jobs with Justice has been out there in support of them.
I got to get on that. That sounds fascinating.
Yeah, and they're trying to get Romney's attention, hoping that while he may or may not be involved with Bain Capital, he may still have some sway to keep their jobs here.
Well, if he made $20 million off Bain or $43 million off Bain Capital the year before last, he still has some considerable sway. Hale, thank you very much for the call. Thanks for listening to WCPT. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
What did Mitt Romney know? When did he know it? And does it matter? Or is it true, as Matthew Vadim suggested, that this is a tempest in a teapot? This is no big deal. Or it's anti-capitalist. Back, Tom Hartman here with you, and amazing, Sensata. We just Shano just was Googling this. Sensata controls, is it? Oh yeah, technology. In fact, I and this is a company. We did find the press release. Thank you, Shano. That the Bain Capital completes purchase of Sensata Technologies from Texas Instruments. That was in 2006. about Bain Capital as a private. Well, that was after Romney left. So, but it's still, hey, it's his company. So, LV in Chicago, your thoughts, say, LV. What's on your mind today?
It's such a great pleasure to get to talk to you, Tom.
Thank
and
you.
I hear you say so many times about the two Santa Claus theory, and it just amazes me how the regular news media, nobody ever mentions it. They all this punditizing, if that's the word, that they do.
Yeah.
And they refuse to talk about it.
I know, and it astounds me, too, because it was on the public record. I mean, it was published in the Wall Street Journal.
Right.
I've written a dozen op-eds about it.
And what gets me today, and I have gotten so infuriated. Today, Romney was talking in Pennsylvania, and behind him, he had the audacity to put up this huge banner, and it says, Obama's upside-down economy. And Tom has got me so upset, I'm pacing the floor.
Well, channel that frustration, pacing. Channel that frustration into activism, you know.
Which I'm trying to do. And hear me out on this.
Okay.
I look at it like this. I have been trying to talk to so many people that are unemployed and this, that, and the other. And there's an industry out there that has grown 280-something percent. And it's the industry of direct sales and network marketing. And I'm saying, look, the Republicans are running around talking about all that they say, and I'm not going to get into that. But they're talking about business owners and entrepreneurial independence and this, that, and the other. If people, the regular folks out here, would get together, band together, and operate in that networking, and they would start getting paychecks, they would have money coming in, cash flow would begin, they would be paying taxes, the unemployment numbers would go down because a self-employed person is an employed person.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm having the hardest time to get people to listen to this idea. I hear them talking on the TV. What are we going to do? And these are actions that cannot be outsourced. Jobs are not coming back the way they were, what, 2, 3, 4 years ago.
Yeah. Or,
they're just not there.
Yeah. And this is one of the fundamental problems with the restructuring of the American economy that came about as a result of free trade is that, you know, back when Franklin Roosevelt was president or Dwight Eisenhower was president, if the federal government spent some money on projects, you know, building roads, building schools, building hospitals, whatever it may be, you get workers who get some income. Those workers take that income and go buy things locally, and those things that they buy at the local, you know, furniture store or the local clothing store were made in a local, you know, Grand Rapids, where
exactly.
I was born, used to be the furniture capital of America.
Right.
They make nothing there now.
Yeah. And it's just, I've even tried to talk to political leaders and saying, look, take this business structure and incorporated into your state. You're running around talking about deficits, and they refuse to listen to me. I feel like I'm the person being kicked out the office.
Yeah.
You say you don't have a way to bring money in. All you want to do is tax and fee people to death.
Yeah.
Well, get a small fee together. And I worked out a plan where Chicago alone could be bringing in, I think it came out to $80 million.
Wow.
To help work on their deficit. And do you know anybody I could talk to about this, Tom?
I don't. My best suggestion, and I may lose you any second here because our caller software just froze and locked up, and they're rebooting the computer right now. So my apologies in advance. But my suggestion would be to post it on as many blogs as you can. If you've got a good idea or if you're looking for help, you can make a post over at TomHartmann.com. You can create a thread or create your own personal blog. And there are, you know, other high-profile sites. OpEdNews.com, DemocraticUnderground.com. Trying to think of other ones where you can create your own blog basically from scratch. Daily Kos. There's a bunch of them. And you know, if you've got a good suggestion, you could submit it to Huffington Post, I suppose. If you have a good suggestion or a good idea, maybe somebody will say, hey, that's a cool idea. I'll pick that up. So anyhow, this whole fascinating issue about Mitt Romney, I just. You know, you got a lot of people who want to talk about this. And if you just got dumped, if your phone call just got dumped, my apologies. We, you know, what's going on, Shano? Is We're resetting. Okay, the minute it's reset, let me know so I can bring the software back up because I had to reboot my own computer here. In the meantime, there are a couple things that I want to rant about. One of them is the vote yesterday in the United States Senate. This is incredible. Back in 2000, when there was a vote to whether or not 527s, which were the like the earlier version of super PACs, whether these five these numbers refer to Internal Revenue Service code, whether or not 527s should be transparent, should they disclose their donors? Right, back when that happened, you had 14 Republicans, a number of whom are still in the United States Senate, voting, yeah, of course, John McCain among them. Yesterday, not one. Now, there were more than 50 votes for the Disclose Act, which, by the way, and this is the most bizarre part about this, the Disclose Act doesn't even take effect until next year. It wouldn't even affect this election. These guys, what this says is that these Republicans are so certain that the money pot from the billionaires and the transnational corporations and UBS and Credit Suisse for Paul Ryan and Ahmed Ahmadinejad for Mitt Romney and all of this stuff, that they're just confident this money's just going to keep on pouring because, you know, Republicans and hookers, they got, well, there's one thing they don't have in common, and that's integrity. At least hookers are upfront about who they are. Yeah, okay, everybody's groaning. I'm sorry, but the libertarians, they want to. Anyway, so you got Chinese business tycoons, all this stuff. In addition to that, did you see this? There's a piece about that. I read this over at Democratic Underground. The U.S. corn crop, we've got this drought, right? Can you spell global warming? We've got this drought going on right now all across the United States. And 7% of the U.S. corn crop has vanished in the last week. What that's going to do is devastate food prices. I mean, you're going to see food prices going up. You're going to see things made out of corn going up, which is most of our food supply. We now, virtually all of our meats are now fed with corn, whether it's turkey, chicken, poultry, beef, whatever it may be. Basically, we eat corn. You may think you're not eating corn. You're eating corn. We're all constantly eating corn. Okay, we got a call screener back up. Now Paul's got to just go through and see who's there and what they have to say, and I'll be able to pick up calls in a few minutes. But I want to finish this rant in any case. This could be a new knife in the gut of our economy. Not could be, it will be. And it raises a whole bunch of really important questions. We're importing an enormous amount of food right now. You know, you go to the store and, oh, the grapes are from Chile and the strawberries are from Mexico and the tomatoes are from, wherever. It is mind-boggling, the amount of food that we import right now. And basically, the staple food for us, the staple foods for us in this country are corn and wheat, the grains out of which we produce everything else. And if those go up in price, are we going to end up? Here's the question. Let me rephrase this. Are we yet to the point where we are food self-sufficient? And historically we were. Franklin Roosevelt, well, Dwight Eisenhower for that matter. Dwight Eisenhower in his famous letter to his brother, Edgar, was talking about, anybody who thinks that we'll have to do away with organized labor and Social Security and farm programs will never be heard from again. And the reason why was because in the 1950s, you had 20% of the U.S. population living on farms. In the 1930s, it was a third of the U.S. population. In the 1890s, it was about 80% of the U.S. population living on the farm, working on the farm. Louise, my wife's grandmother, who I knew very well, she died at the age of 97, just maybe 8-10 years ago. And her grandmother lived on a farm in Michigan. They had a 100-acre dairy farm in Michigan, and they made it through the Great Depression. I mean, and she was born at the turn of the century. She was born in 1905 or something. And must have been a little later than that, but whatever it was. I mean, she was a kid growing up in the Great Depression on this farm, and then they had this farm. Actually, she died in 90, must have been, because it was when we were in Vermont, so it was 97 or 98. Yeah, so she was probably born around 1900. And she would often tell us about how during the Great Depression, she would buy one dress a year from Sears, and she bought sugar and salt. And that was it. They grew everything else they needed. And that was like the common story across America. We were food self-sufficient. We're not anymore. What are we going to do with this drought? What are we going to do if we can't produce our own food? You know, we're not producing our own energy. We're not going to produce our own food. We're not manufacturing our own goods. We can't even make uniforms for the Olympics. What kind of trouble are we in because of these insane economic policies?
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And how do we get out of that trouble? Your call's coming right back after this, 45 minutes past the hour. Speaking of that news, Bob Ney with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com, on the line with us. Hey, Bob.
How are you doing, Tom?
I am great, but I'll get better. I hope the same is true of you, sir.
Yes, sir.
So what's going on in the world today?
Well, a couple people to Capitol Hill. Dick Cheney has arrived on the Hill, and he's reacquainting, I don't think he's making any new friends, maybe, but he's certainly talking to the Republican side. He's up there.
So Darth Vader is here in town.
Yeah, you know, I said that today. Can we play Star Wars? And I said he's going to go to John Boehner and say, I'm your father.
You'll hear that.
And then John will cry.
You're right. And, who's your daddy, John?
I can't help it. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
But he is up on the Hill. I don't know who honestly thought of the bright move to bring him, but he's saying, you know, the defense will be cut. Look, everybody knew when they passed this sequestering, January the 2nd, if they don't do something, this hits and that hits.
Well, and not only that, it's only going to cut defense spending back to the levels that we saw around 2002, 2003. It's a large cut, but, you know, we just ended a war, too.
And we've ended a war, and we should not be, you know, that much into the need of money for that type of spending.
I say let it go.
It's not the end of the world type of thing.
No. And no, it is if you're a defense contractor, though.
Well, yes, if you're Halliburton.
Yeah, for example. Right. By the way, I have a question. I don't know if you would know the answer, but, you know, when Dick Cheney came into the vice presidency, he was sitting on an enormous amount of Halliburton stock that was largely worthless because the company was almost bankrupt in the months before the election of 2000 because he had acquired Dresser Industries, which had this huge asbestos liability that nobody really realized, or maybe they did, I don't know, but... it nearly bankrupted Halliburton, and all of those huge no-bid contracts for Iraq and Afghanistan turned Halliburton back into an enormously profitable company. And Cheney continued to own that stock, and his whole argument was that he could do that as vice president because it was in a blind trust, and he was not making decisions about whether Halliburton would be hired or not. And he also at one point, I think it was in the election of 2002, which he wasn't involved in, but it was a congressional election, made the comment that he was in the process of selling all his Halliburton stock to put this issue to bed. Do you know if he ever did?
You know, I don't know that he did. All I ever heard was that he, he was sacrificing so much he could make so much money, which I never bought that argument because he'll still make money in a blind trust.
Sure, and not only that, his company with him at the helm was going down the tubes.
Yeah, I'm not sure that, I don't know. The answer to that, whether he sold that or not. But it was always an issue out there.
Yeah, okay. And what else is going on in the world?
And Ben Bernanke was up on Capitol Hill, and he was warning of the... You know, it's interesting. We used to watch, of course, the previous Fed chair would come up, and we would say, interest rates up or down, and now they really can't go any lower. So he kind of had a mild, I think, visit today on the Hill, although he said, look, this is tax-mageddon, he called it. And in other words, if this all kicks in January the 2nd, 2013, he said they're going to go off a fiscal, you know, cliff.
But wait a minute, they're going to have more revenue.
And they've got to do, and he says they've got to do something before that, so he's urging, you know, something to happen. But what I took out of it, Tom, honestly, is that Bernanke's kind of saying, we've done about what we can do.
He has.
In your hands.
He has. I mean, he's got interest rates down to virtually zero.
That's right.
The scam that I think is outrageous is that you've got banksters borrowing from the Fed at 0.01% interest rate, and then taking, say they borrow $1 trillion from the Fed. They then take that money and buy U.S. treasuries, right? In other words, they loan that money to the United States government, and the U.S. government has to pay those banks 1.5-2% on those treasuries, and then when the money finally gets paid back, when they roll the treasuries over, they pay the Fed back 0.01%, and it's like a Ponzi scheme. It just blows my mind. It's a Ponzi scheme. The bank, the Fed and the banks and the Treasury anyway, enough of that rant.
Well, when they got the bailouts, they said we don't have to be transparent.
Right.
Which is amazing with taxpayers' dollars.
Yeah.
And they just said we don't.
Well,
have
and
to be
the
transparent.
The Republicans just said that yesterday with regard to their donors. I don't, as a recovering Republican, Bob, why is it that the Republicans want us to show our ID when we vote, but they don't want us to show our ID if we give money to Republicans?
You know, when the Republicans were, went back and forth, of course, when the Republicans weren't at the top of the food chain with the super PACs, they wanted, I can remember Mitch McConnell when I was there, he wanted disclosure. Let's just do full transparency, which wasn't a bad idea.
Sure.
I actually agree with it myself.
Yeah.
For everybody. And now, of course, they're controlling the super PAC, so they don't want full disclosure. Now, they use a shield here, though, the nonprofits, because they got some nonprofits that came and said, oh, if you do this, it's going to make us, you know, overregulated. Well, I think if you contribute, that should be known, too.
Sure.
But they're being used as a shield. Well, we can't do this because it hurts nonprofits. Right. They don't want to do it, of course, because it will expose how much, who, where, why, and how.
Well, I think the easy way to do that is for the IRS to just blow up these 501c4s that are supposed to be educational and charitable organizations and say, no, they're engaged in electioneering. And that's,
they are.
That's a violation of tax exempt status.
I know you saw that. Carl Rove's on TV. He said, well, we do issue advocacy for balanced budgets, but they do it by controlling people who get elected.
Right, and by trashing President Obama because his budget isn't balanced. And so, anyhow, but another minute here, Bob. I'm assuming you have other news going on in the world.
Yeah, you know, this is kind of interesting, I thought, but I don't know how many people have been following the FDA Office and Agency Spying Program, but Senator Grassley is claiming in a letter to the FDA commissioner that they've been spying, and they've been spying on from the general counsel's office. It was just, I thought, interesting take, and I think on a bipartisan basis, they're going to be, you know, looking into that to see what on earth really is happening. And was there
the reason why the FDA was spying on its people because they're concerned about regulatory capture? They're concerned about the revolving door with industry.
I think that's part of it. And you know, if that's the case, then I think they're, you know, being the watchdog.
Yeah,
they do need to clear this one up because you know, the FDA, even like people like to kick it around. And I understand that.
Sure.
But on this one, it might be the case that they were trying to make sure that, you know, the hen house wasn't being raided.
Yeah, yeah, very interesting. Bob Ney with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com. Bob, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Always great having you on, and great talking with you today. Bob Ney, one of the good guys out there. So, the LIBOR scandal and why it's important. Congressman Dennis Kucinich is going to be with us next. Stick around. This is going to be fascinating.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program, broadcasting on commercial radio stations from coast to coast on Sirius XM all across America, all across the North American continent, on Pacifica stations across America, Europe, and Africa, on American Forces Radio and every U.S. military base in the world. Simulcast is television on both Dish Network and DirecTV and cable systems nationwide by the Free Speech TV Network. Welcome back. Congressman Dennis Kucinich on the line with us. Kucinich.house.gov is his official website. And, Congressman, welcome back to the program.
Tom, it's good to be with you, as always. Thank you.
It is great to have you with us. Two things that I'd like to talk to you about, actually three, and let me just lay them out. We've got about 10 minutes here. You can decide how you want to organize them. Number one, the LIBOR scandal. I'd like your take on that. I know you're really well informed on this stuff. Number two, the Davis-Bessie nuke plan. You have apparently been involved in finding out what's going on with this. I have a note from the folks from Beyond Nuclear, Paul Gunter, that you had been working with them on these pinhole leaks and all this stuff, and I'm curious your take on that. And then Kucinich Action, you've got this new project that you're doing, this new organization, and I wanted to be sure and I wanted to learn more about it, and I wanted to be sure and inform my listeners and viewers about it. So where do you want to start?
Well, let's start with LIBOR.
Okay.
It's a good place to start because it is the biggest financial scandal that has hit that has hit the world.
Mm-hmm.
And it's important for, I'm sure by now many of your listeners are aware that the so-called London interbank rate, mm-hmm. it really involves bankers, their offered rate involves bankers sitting down and estimating how much they believe they'd have to pay if they were borrowing from each other. And, you know, whatever they're estimating is supposed to give a picture of their financial health.
Right.
Well, it turns out that the rates have essentially been rigged and that they've been manipulated. Barclays manipulated the rates. They've been fined a tremendous amount of money, I think over $400 million.
Mm-hmm.
But they couldn't have done it by themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And so you now have rates which are the LIBOR, which is a key rate that's the basis for a wide range of consumer products, you know, student loans, car loans, every kind of loan you could think of.
Sure. Mortgages.
Pegged to this London interbank offered rate, which is manipulated in favor of a fraud. And when you get into the weeds on this, you find out that there is a separate LIBOR daily rate for each of 10 currencies at 15 maturities.
Hmm.
And you find out that that what we have here is a manipulation of the market that is so broad and so deep, it's mind-boggling.
Well, 15 different currencies, 10 different rates, that would mean, or do I have that backwards, that would mean 150 opportunities, different slices in which, if you knew which way the market was going to go and you were in one of the highly leveraged businesses like CDOs and credit default swaps and things, you could take bets in the trillions and make billions.
Well, if you have, you know, if you have a conspiracy, I mean, it's one of the things that has to be proven. Again,
right.
Barclays could not have done this by themselves. It is possible mathematically for one bank to be able to jack up a rate through submitting the highest possible estimates of how much they'd pay to borrow from banks and thereby distort the total of all of the estimates that are submitted.
Right.
But what's happening, though, is that apparently banks, going back to 2007, if not earlier, have been submitting estimates of LIBOR that were aimed at trying to cloak the actual financial health of the banks by implying that they could get a better interest rate because, and if you think you can get a better interest rate, it means your underlying financial health is better.
Right.
So they were lying about their financial health, and they were, Barclays was essentially, the people in charge of this were ordered to do that. And the guy at Barclays is now saying, well, the Bank of England basically encouraged him to do it. And the question is whether the British government was involved as well.
Right. The Bank of England being the central bank in the U.K., their equivalent of our U.S. Fed, the Federal Reserve.
Right. So the banks were making it appear that they were healthier than they were. And they're lowballing their bid submissions. And now we have a question as to whether the entire arc of international commerce is based on a lie.
Right. Is it a rigged casino? That's amazing. It's absolutely amazing. Tell me about CarcinogeAction.com, this new project of yours.
Well, I'm going to be leaving Congress January 2nd.
Mm-hmm.
And in order to continue to help candidates who want integrity in markets, who are for monetary policy reform or for peace, for healthcare for all, for serious environmental protections, we have put together Kucinich Action to help candidates and to help on issues in order to have a continuing presence in matters affecting our nation and certainly communities within the nation.
So this is like a political action fund, percentageaction.com, and if people want to support you and the work that you're doing in trying to influence the future course of American politics, you know, kind of the rudder of the ship of state, they can go to percentageaction.com and participate, I'm guessing.
They can do that, and it would be good if they did. What we're trying to do is to provide an effective counterbalance in the long run to these in certain individuals who are able to contribute tens of millions of dollars to one candidate, distorting the process, making of government an auction, ruining any chance for democratic principles to be brought into our Congress by just insisting that it's going to be not a rule of law, but a rule of money.
Yeah.
And so if we can get tens of thousands and hundreds of thousands of people to participate, they can provide the balance to the people, one or two individuals who are just throwing in millions trying to buy elections.
That's a great idea, and it seems like a really, really noble cause to be pursuing as you're leaving Congress. KucinichAction.com is the website for that. I'm curious your thoughts, given I know that you've dug into this Davis-Bessie nuclear plant pretty aggressively because it's near your district. It's not in Ohio, but it could certainly.
It's actually on the lake in the western part of the state.
Oh, it is. I'm sorry. But if it goes, your district is impacted, and we've seen what's going on in Fukushima. What are your thoughts on nuclear power in this country in general, and if there's any updates on Davis-Bessie specifically?
Well, for almost 40 years, I've been involved in the question of what about some of the underlying financial and safety issues involving nuclear power.
Right.
And at Davis-Bessie, which is located near Port Clinton, Ohio, we have a plant that years ago had a head had a hole in the head of its reactor that was covered up by the management that presented a real threat, one of the most serious nuclear incidents in the country's history of nuclear power plants, and it was covered up by the management. They were fined, I think, about $25 million for their misdeed, and they created a potential of a safety breach that could have resulted in a release of radioactivity into the environment. We also know that this is the same management company that created the blackout all over the East Coast years ago because they failed to properly maintain lines and trim trees. But the incident case is that there are cracks in their containment building. They're trying to say these cracks have no real significance, but as we got deeper into it, there is a real significance. I'm pushing the NRC on this because if they can't repair these cracks and rebuild the containment building, they have to shut down this reactor, which the management's trying to relicense.
Good on you, sir. Congressman Dennis Kucinich, KucinichAction.com. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Great.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
That is Kucinich, KucinichAction, ACTION.com. Check out Dennis Kucinich's new gig. So Ezra Klein over in the Washington Post is asking the question, what could be, actually he's paraphrasing George Will and asking the question, what could be so damaging in Mitt Romney's tax returns that he doesn't want you and I to see them? And mostly he doesn't want Republican voters to see them because he's not going after my vote. And he knows he's not going after my vote. So what's so damaging that he doesn't want? Is it that he doesn't want the billionaire Republican voters and the millionaire Republican voters to know what's in his tax returns? Or is it that he doesn't want the Joe Sixpack, Fox TV watching, oh my God, the Democrats are going to take away my gun and make me sit next to a gay person? That he doesn't want those Republicans to know. Right? Which is it? Which constituency is Mitt Romney afraid is going to find something out in his tax returns, and what is that he's afraid they're going to find out? And Ezra Klein, in today's Washington Post, putting out the hypothesis, he says, the question is, what could be in them? He says, right now the most popular theory is that Romney simply didn't pay any taxes at all in 2009. As Joshua Green wrote, it's possible that he suffered a large enough capital loss that carried forward and coupled with his various offshore tax havens, he wound up paying no U.S. federal taxes in 2009. Isn't that nice? If you're in the capitalist class and you lose and you have a bad year, the next year you don't have to pay as much in taxes. This whole thing of our tax code, for just a moment, take it out of the Mitt Romney bad, Barack Obama good, or whatever. I'm not trying. Well, with regard to taxes and income, Obama's been quite transparent, and Mitt Romney hasn't. But the larger issue that this illuminates, that we should be talking about as a nation, and I have not heard one commentator in the corporate media raise this question. And it could be because, entry-level jobs, basically, if you're on, one of the major networks, entry-level jobs, if you're in front of the camera, start out at $1 million, $2 million a year. So these people take that money and they invest it. And after your second or third or fourth, 1 year's worth of income and you're set for the rest of your life. And so future years, you're investing it all. And pretty soon, they're members of the investor class, and they're living off dividend and interest income, which is taxed at a maximum 15%. So I don't expect that I'm going to see, fill in the blank, David Gregory or I don't want to pick on David Gregory. But any of these guys, I don't expect I'm going to see any of them talking about this, because they are the investor class. They're not as rich as Mitt Romney, but hey, they're doing fine. And they like the fact that their maximum income tax rate is 15% on a large chunk of their income. So I don't know if the practice has begun. Certainly CEOs of the companies that own the networks and senior executives are being compensated with stock options, so they pay a maximum 15% income tax when they finally vest those, when they turn them into cash. Could it be that the talent is doing the same thing? I don't know. But what I find amazing, genuinely amazing, is that in the United States of America right now, we have two kinds of income that you can earn. You can decide, now many people don't make a decision. They're simply born with a lot of money. George W. Bush was born with millions of dollars in a trust fund. So he never had to have a job in his life. Mitt Romney was born with millions of dollars in income, but he went out and created a company that squeezed millions of dollars out of other people's companies. But the point is that setting aside inherited wealth, setting aside the Paris Hiltons of the world, you can decide to go into business and do one of two things. You can go into the banking field and take most of your pay, or into the CEO and senior executive business and take most of your pay as stock options and pay a maximum top income tax rate of 15%, which is like right in the neighborhood of where a good teacher pays. But you're making millions or tens of millions or hundreds of millions, or in the case of over a dozen people on Wall Street, over $2 billion a year. And you're paying a maximum 15% income tax rate. You throw some tax deductions in there and you get down to Mitt Romney's 13.9%. We've got that. And then you've got the people who decide that they're going to do something with their lives that actually produces something. The former category, that first category, I'd call them the takers, right? The people who are, they're capitalists. They're living off capital income, right? They're living off investment income. They're taking, they're siphoning money off the top of the economy. And for some reason, we've decided as a society to reward them with a top maximum 15% income tax rate. And then there are the makers. There are the people who actually make things. With apologies to Daniel Quinn and his brilliant books. Ishmael and My Ishmael and Story of Bee. Then you got the makers, the people, the worker bees, whether they're working at Walmart or whether they're working in a factory or whether they're working as brain surgeons or rocket scientists, they're taking their income as income. And their maximum tax rate is 35%. Why is that? Ronald Reagan, you've got a clip of this, Shane, where Ronald Reagan said, "Do you really want the bus driver and the millionaire to be paying the same tax rate? That's crazy." Or he said, "You want the millionaire to pay less than the bus driver. That's crazy. And here it is.
We're going to close the unproductive tax loopholes that have allowed some of the truly wealthy to avoid paying their fair share. In theory, some of those loopholes were understandable, but in practice, they sometimes made it possible for millionaires to pay nothing, while a bus driver was paying 10% of his salary, and that's crazy. Do you think the millionaire ought to pay more in taxes than the bus driver, or less?
More, said all the Republicans. Is it enough to make you nostalgic for Reagan? Not quite. But it's getting there. 27 minutes past the hour. So why do we have this two-tiered tax system, and why aren't we having a conversation about it?
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Why do you think that our tax policy has been skewed so that the takers are, you know, pay so much less in income taxes than the makers? Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Just to correct the record, a caller earlier went off on Haldeman and Ehrlichman being Mormons. They were actually Christian Scientists. And Richard Nixon was a Quaker, so which most people don't know. So, picking on people's religions doesn't turn me on. Picking on people's ideology, picking on their notion of how the world should work, that, I think, is called appropriate political discourse. For example, if there is a corporation, and let's say that corporation shows a $100 million profit at the end of the year, and let's say that, you know, they're in the oil industry, so they can get tax credits and all kinds of tax deductions and other things that offset that profit, so they don't have to pay any income tax whatsoever. And you say, what, is that possible? Yes, ExxonMobil showed a $400 billion just sounds unbelievable, but it was just this massive profit last year or the year before, and they paid no profit, no tax. Maybe it was $40 billion. They paid no tax on it whatsoever. Shana was checking it out. I haven't had a chance to get back into the chat room since my computer crashed. My apologies to everybody in the chat room, by the way. But they still distributed a dividend, because they had a profit. So you got a profit. General Electric, no, they pay no income taxes in most years. ExxonMobil pays no income taxes in most years. But they distributed a dividend, and those dividend holders, those stockholders, those people like Jack Welch with GE or the people like Rex Tillerson with ExxonMobil, it was $4.9 billion with a B. That's $4,900 million in profit. Zero income taxes. And that was a quarterly profit, wasn't it? Or was that a, that was okay, that was earnings for the year. So that was the annual profit. So it wasn't taxed twice. It wasn't taxed at all. And then they distributed it as profit. They give it to people like Mitt Romney, and he pays a maximum income tax of 15%. But these guys have the rich people who make their living sitting on their butt around the pool waiting for the dividend checks to arrive, the Paris Hiltons of the world, the Mitt Romneys of the world, they have this rationalization. And the rationalization goes something like this. The reason why those of us who are in our livings sitting on our butt around the pool waiting for the dividend check to arrive pay a maximum 15% income tax is because that money has already been taxed at the corporate level. The corporation, when it declared the income as profit, had to pay an income tax, and then they took the money that was left over and they gave it to me. And then I have to pay an income tax. Now, that's stupid for two reasons. One, it's stupid because most of the time it doesn't happen. And two, it's stupid because you get to say this, you know, okay, I've got this radio show, and we make our money from our advertisers sending us money for advertising on the show. That those advertisers got that money from what? From customers, right? If somebody goes to Blinds.com or Angie's List or if, you know, whatever, one of our sponsors, a consumer goes to them and buys something, they're buying it with after-tax income. So that's already been taxed. And then that company gets the money and they buy advertising on our show, but that money was already taxed before the consumer gave it to them. And then And then we take that money, and I give that money to my employees. My employees pay tax on it. So it's been taxed like two times that we know of, and how many times was it taxed before that consumer? See, the argument is nonsensical. It's like standing between two mirrors and looking off into infinity. It's a stupid argument. But here's Mitt Romney making it.
Then you only paid 13% of taxes, while most Americans paid much more than that. Is that fair?
Well, actually, I released 2 years of taxes, and I think the average is almost 15%. And then also, on top of that, I gave another more than 15% to charity. When you add it together, all the taxes and the charity, particularly in the last year, I think it reaches almost 40% that I gave back to the community. One of the reasons why we have a lower tax rate on capital gains...
Here it comes.
...is because capital gains are also... being taxed at the corporate level.
Right.
So as businesses earn profits, that's taxed at 35%. Then as they distribute
right.
those profits in dividends, that's taxed at 15% more. So all totaled, the tax rate is really closer to 45 or 50%.
Right. But is it fair for what you pay 13% while most pay much more than that?
Well, again, I go back to the point that the funds are being taxed twice at two different levels.
You see? That's Mitt Romney himself making the argument for a 15% capital gains tax rate, because after all, by the time the money got to me, the corporation had to pay taxes on it. Well, by the time I paid Shane's paycheck, you know, that money came from our advertisers, which came from customers who had all paid taxes on the money before they gave it to our advertisers. And those customers, the money that they got that they paid income tax on, they probably got from a company that got money from other customers who had paid income tax. Do you get it? It is an insane argument. And yet that's where Mitt Romney stands. Why are we not having that conversation in America? That conversation that simply asks the very simple question. Knowing that this double taxation thing is a canard, it's nonsense. It's a stupid argument. It's indefensible. It's unsupportable. Are you saying that the people who took dividends from General Electric should be paid at a higher than 15% tax rate because GE paid no income taxes? By the way, don't expect to hear a discussion of this on NBC, which GE owns about half of. Are you saying that people who take money from ExxonMobil in dividends should pay higher than 15% because ExxonMobil pays no income taxes? Or most of the major corporations in America? Mitt Romney says, well, they tax a 35% corporate rate. Actually, the effective tax rate, income tax rate for corporations in America is 7%. That's the rate they actually pay because of all the loopholes and deductions. So if you want to add them together, Mitt, 7 plus 15 is 22, if I'm doing my math right. Or is it 23? 5, 6, 7. It's 22. So that's 22% tax, and that still isn't the 35% that the surgeon makes or pays. So anyhow, enough of my rants. Let me get you back in on this and some of your thoughts. John in Minneapolis. Hey, John, what's on your mind today?
Well, I just wanted to say, you know, in answering your question, why we're like the way we are as far as, you know, so extremely capitalistic, individualistic.
Wait a second. This has nothing to do with capitalism. This has to do with an elite class. This is more royalism.
Excuse me. Whatever you want to call it, we don't have a socialist party in this country, don't have a labor party, which attempts to democratize the economy. If you have very, very few people owning, you know, very, very concentrated wealth, what is it going to happen except that these people are going to control everything? We don't have that, or they don't have that in Germany, which went from an autocratic system in the 19th century in far less time to a socialized system. Same with Holland, the same with France. You know, you can go through a whole list of Northern European countries that are far more democratic because they've had a labor party, they've had a socialist party, they have a green party.
Right.
What we need to do then is to adopt a political system that allows this. We also need to change the moral and ethical thinking of people, and I don't know how we can do that when you and a few other people are lone rangers in this fight to change people's opinion about the fact that, yes, they do deserve to have more of a say in what goes on. They deserve to have returns in their
John, I got your point. I got your point. And thank you for the call, and thank you for saying it so well. And let me just answer. Number one, those countries all have proportional representation, which means that if a party only gets 6% of the vote, they get 6% of the seats in parliament. In the United States, if a party gets 6% of the vote, they're never heard from again. Ross Perot's party, the Reform Party, got almost 20% of the vote at the federal level in the election of 1992. Never heard from again, other than Jesse Ventura up in Minnesota. And now they're pretty much gone. The Green Party, you know, 2, 3, 4% here and there, things like that. We don't have proportional representation. We can have, and this is something the Green Party has been championing, and I know a lot of progressives inside the Democratic Party have been pushing for. We need to, the Democratic Party institutionally opposes it, which I think is wrong. But we can have instant runoff voting, IRV, and that's something that we should be working toward, number one. But perhaps more important, the comment that I would make about your very thoughtful comment, John, and well said, is that every single one of those parties that you described in Europe, you know, in part they exist and they have some power because they can participate in the electoral process. That's what I was just talking about a second ago, proportional representation in IRV. But more importantly, they all derived out of social movements. They all derived out of grassroots movements. Petra Kelly started the International Green Party in Germany back in the 1960s, I think it was, maybe the late 50s, somewhere around then. But they all started as grassroots movements, just like the civil rights movement started as a grassroots movement, just like the abolition movement started as a grassroots movement, just like the movement to get the 18-year-olds the right to vote in the United States started as a grassroots movement, just like the abolition of alcohol movement began as a grassroots movement, and the movement to end the prohibition of alcohol, prohibition, excuse me, not abolition, it began as a grassroots movement. Over and over and over again, what you see is that movement politics ultimately influences and becomes party politics. So if you want to have the biggest influence possible on party politics, regardless of the party, get involved with the movements.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And where are the movements? PDAmerica.org, DemocracyForAmerica.com, MoveToAmend.org. You know, there's a long list of them. Involve yourself. So Shane dug into this thing, and ExxonMobil's profits were actually, and hey, I'm back in the chat room, isn't that cool, were actually $30.6 billion. The $6 billion we were quoting earlier was just their chemical operations. And again, they pay no income taxes on this. And so, you know, we're covering all the costs of the commons. We're providing them with the educated workforce. We're providing them with the roads. We're providing them with the fire protection. We're providing them with the police protection. We're providing them with a court system that can enforce their contracts. We're providing them with a jail that they can stick people in who try to harm them in some way or violate their contracts or, you know, fill in the blanks. We're providing, you know, but they pay no. But Mitt Romney says that if he makes millions, tens of millions, hundreds of millions of dollars in profits from a company like ExxonMobil that pays no taxes, he should still only pay a maximum 15% income tax because, after all, he's a capitalist. Right? This is just Don in Eagan, Minnesota, listening on AM 950. Hey, Don, what's on your mind?
Oh, good to get through. Well, you know, Romney does nothing but lie. Every time he opens his mouth, when his lips move, he's lying.
I've noticed that.
I just wanted to appreciate all your writings and everything. I read all of it.
Thank you.
And it's fantastic. And you got your points right down to the nap, you know what. But, the other reason I was calling was because, you know, the 99ers were protesting the rich, and with them trying to buy this campaign, the greatest thing that these 99ers could do is get out and vote for the opposition that they're supporting with all their dollars, because then they would have all those dollars going down the drain, so to speak.
Right.
Well, not to, you know.
So, in other words, if the billionaires are going to support the Republicans, people should vote for anybody other than a Republican. and let those billionaires have wasted their money. That's your argument.
Absolute.
Yeah.
Absolute.
I think that's quite a reasonable argument. Man. It's a very reasonable argument. Don, thank you very much, and thanks again for listening to AM 950 there in Minneapolis. Jay in Camp Lejeune, North Carolina?
Yes, sir.
Hey, Jay. I'm great. Thanks for listening to Sirius Satellite Radio. What's up?
What I can't grasp my hands around is I understand the offshore is nothing that he's doing is illegal, but I know what perception is. How could the Republican Party, and once again, John McCain is going to lose another election because his people knew what was in those tax returns, and they could have blew the whistle on him before this got started. They could have said, if you run, we're going to mention your tax return.
Yeah.
How in the world can they let him get this far? That just baffles me. And this is the second time that party has done something like this. They gave us Palin last time, which was crazy. This might even be crazier to know you had this guy's financials, and nobody in the Republican Party stopped it. And that just shows leadership right there.
I agree. I'm looking for the quote from McCain here. It's apparently going to be a little harder to find than I thought. I thought it was right at the top of DU or TPM or something, but. John McCain basically today came out and said, we didn't not select Mitt Romney as vice president because of his tax returns. We did not select him because Sarah Palin was a better candidate. Now, that I think is even stronger argument to not vote for Mitt Romney, right? If Sarah Palin is if Sarah Palin is a smarter and brighter candidate than Mitt Romney, and this is John McCain speaking in defense of Mitt Romney, I mean, it's amazing.
I've been busy all day. I have not heard that one.
Yeah, well, he came out today and said it. He said, this is so wrong that these people are picking on Mitt Romney and saying that, you know, we saw 20 years of his tax returns and we didn't choose him because of his tax returns. We saw the tax returns, but the reason we didn't choose him had nothing to do with his tax returns. It had to do with Sarah Palin being a better candidate. And I'm like, at that point, man, you know. So, Jay, I got to move along, but thank you for the call.
Okay,
thanks for listening to us in Camp Lejeune. Paul in Woodinville, Washington, listening on AM 1090, where I will be this Saturday in Seattle. Hey, Paul, what's up?
And I will see you there.
Oh, great. Look forward to it.
Tom, if employers are allowed to get your Facebook password when you apply for a job, maybe we need a bill that when you run for federal office, your 10 years of your tax returns become a matter of public record. Maybe that's a bill we need to have in Congress. I know you don't like to beat up on people's religion, but let me ask you about something. Is that, from my understanding, the 1862 Morrill Anti-Bigamy Act, sponsored by then Congressman Justin Morrill, targeted the Mormon Church against polygamy, but not because it was a morality issue, but because the church, after only being in existence for 30 years, was sheltering lots and lots of assets under the umbrella of it being a nonprofit, so they were all one big happy family sheltering all of their assets.
Right.
And that the Morrill Anti-Bigamy Act said that a church at that time could not have assets exceeding $50,000. And of course, it's been amended since then. The act was challenged in 1878, Reynolds v. United States, and it was upheld by the United States Supreme Court. But that's my understanding. And so the Mormon Church has had a history of sheltering and evading taxes.
Well, they're not unique in that, Paul.
Well, maybe.
I mean,
maybe
there are religious communities all over America where people have gotten together. They've made their houses into what's the word? Rectories, you know, where the past and said this is religious property. I mean, these are horrible examples, but that's what Jim Jones was doing. That's what David Koresh was doing. I'm sure that there are many mainstream ones that you never heard of that are doing that kind of thing. That's
true.
Basically, you know, how monasteries and nunneries or whatever they call where nuns live.
And that's why I wanted to jump on your point from a day or so ago is that it's time to start taxing churches at 10%.
Well, I think we should just
of their assets.
Just tax them as if they were a corporation, you know, and do their profit making entities and, you know, revenue making. But don't tax the monasteries. I'm with it with the monks. I'm all about the monks. Okay, coming up next on the Tom and the Nuns. Coming up next on the Tom, or whatever they call themselves, on the Tom Harmon Program, term limits. What do we need to fix Congress? I'll challenge conservative attorney Robin Fawcett, author of the new book American Manifesto, on why he thinks. He's got some actually very strange ideas about how to fix democracy. Plus, the best of the rest of the news and your calls right here. Don't forget, get out there, show up. Democracy is not a spectator sport. It requires your action. hashtag you're it. We'll see you tomorrow. Occupy something.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to TomHartman.com.